This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary, not available in all states or situations.
News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. We have so much going on. I spent the morning on Fox and Friends, and we were looking at the pomp and circumstance in every way. I thought I was at the year 1820 instead of 2025 as the president came in and was brought in by soldiers on horseback, on a carriage, and he meets the king and queen, and they're having lunch right now, and later they're going to have dinner. And then it's going to be a serious meeting as the president visits the UK on an unprecedented invite from the royal family. There seems to be a lot of mutual respect there, which I think is heartening. Also today, Senate Judiciary Subcommittee hearing on the fate of unaccompanied children that came across during the Biden years. That's going to be important. And Kash Patel sits down to get cross-examined by the House Oversight Committee to look at all the issues out there from Epstein to Charlie Kirk's killer. Before we get to Brett Baer, let's get and Howie Kurtz a little bit later, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
It's my time, not yours.
My God.
If you want to talk about
dividing this country,
it is
my
time.
I follow you on your social media posts that tear this country apart. Sir, you don't tell me my time is over. You can't lecture me.
That's Cory Booker likes to put on a show and just say and talk and not allow any answers. And Kash Patel wasn't having it. The FBI director personally attacked, but unlike most, attacked back as he defines the threats today. And we have the hunt and everything that went into the hunt for the Kirk's killer.
Number two.
The federal government not communicating with the city what they're doing causes, well, fear. And to be honest with you, it may cause real challenges for local law enforcement trying to do their jobs.
That is J.B. Pritzker. It's kind of an interesting thing when you try to crack down on crime in Chicago and the governor of the state is insulted. That's what we're looking at now. Crime crackdown not stopping. Moving into Chicago, predictably, the city pushing back against the help coming their way.
Number one.
After shooting Mr. Kirk, Robinson hid the gun, discarded the clothing, and told his roommate to delete incriminating text messages.
That is Jeff Gray in Provo, Utah, running through the evidence collected in the assassination of Charlie Kirk. The investigation releases a mountain of information and evidence about the mindset of the killer, what it revealed, and maybe more that could be involved. And they're not shutting that down. Brett Baer joins us now, chief political anchor of Fox News, special report. He's got a book coming out. It's great. It's called To Rescue the American Spirit, Teddy Roosevelt and the Birth of a Superpower. Brett, first off, this has been, out of all the things that that you've covered, that we've been on the air together about, what makes this feel so different since the Charlie Kirk assassination?
Well, I tell you, Brian, it's just profound in that it's had this reverberation across a ton of communities, you know, not just here in the U.S., but around the world. And, you know, I mean, you see these vigils continuing, and I think you see the fallout from it. I think because it was so public and because that actual shooting made its way around on social media, it also had this kind of spooky effect on people's minds of the thought of that happening, much like when you saw the video of RFK being shot or JFK being shot in the back of that car. It's a kind of indelible image that, you know, it provokes emotion.
The other thing is he's your friend and he's your guest. I mean, he's somebody you think to yourself, I mean, with my, especially my Sunday show, I had to space him out because, you know, you can't have him on every week, but he always brings a point of view and he always has an idea, and he could always move it. He doesn't give predictable answers, and he is making news. And then to think that that guy in the prime of his life, you could see him tossing out hats 1 minute and the next minute suffer the most horrific wound possible. It's really something that, not, you know, and it, now with the eve of the internet, you don't have to wait for a film to be developed like the Zapruder film. You see it now. And the fact is, after yesterday, we know so much more about the suspect. Have you ever seen a press conference like that of such substance?
No, and I think that there was a need for it because a lot of people were going down the rabbit hole online, and it was getting a lot of even mainstream attention. And not to say that this investigation is finished or that there aren't other pieces of this or somebody couldn't have supported him, et cetera, but some of the theories out there were getting out there, and I think that that was part of the reason they got so detailed in some of the evidence that they had. That thread text message with his boyfriend who's transitioning, I think, was probably the biggest moment.
I don't think there's any doubt about it. Here is Jeff Gray yesterday, the Utah County DA, Cut 12.
Robinson's mother explained that over the last year or so, Robinson had become more political and had started to lean more to the left, becoming more pro-gay and trans rights oriented. In one conversation before the shooting, Robinson mentioned that Charlie Kirk would be holding an event at UVU, which Robinson said was a stupid venue for the event. Robinson accused Kirk of spreading hate. When asked why he did it, Robinson explained there is too much evil and the guy, referring to Charlie Kirk, spreads too much hate.
He went on to say, I had enough of his hatred. Some hate can't be negotiated out. But yet I'm watching other channels and other pundits say we're still looking for a motive. He just told you the motive in his own words. He said everything except for say it out loud. He put it on print. In one, it was a written letter. The other, some text messages. Is it pretty clear we have the motive?
Yeah, I've seen that where it's like we don't have a motive yet. Well, what was the reading of the probable cause and the indictment, if you will? It was all motive. It was hatred for him, you know, his belief that Charlie Kirk was spreading hate. It was, you know, he felt that this was the time. He planned it for a week. In his own words, that is the motive. I mean, it's right there. And the other thing is that even today, after all of that, there are still outlets that are saying this kid is from a MAGA family and he was really a conservative who grew up in a gun culture, and that's the problem. It's baffling, and, you know, I guess you can only say it so much.
Right. Douglas Murray echoes your thoughts. Listen to him last night, Cut 24.
These are the same people who talk about misinformation and disinformation and much more. They're the ones doing that at the moment. It's very clear to anyone who looks at this what the ideology of Charlie's assassin was. It's been clear for days. Of course, those people on the left who've been lying about conservatives for recent years, smearing and defaming conservatives, calling everyone a fascist and a Nazi. Now they say, let's not talk about this, or let's pretend it's both sides. And did you see today, some of those same people who've been doing that were saying, look, there's violence on both political sides. Look at the attack on Governor Shapiro's mansion. They didn't mention that the person who attacked Governor Shapiro's mansion was a left-wing Palestinianist activist.
Yeah, he was going after him because he was Jewish. So Douglas Murray, again, putting that's exactly what you were saying. I mean, we don't pretend like we don't have the answer.
Yeah, it's frustrating. And I think it's part of, you know, there's wish casting, I think, on some sides that this person fell into a different bucket, you know, and it doesn't fit into the narrative that they really want. So it's taking him a long time to accept even a very detailed probable cause sheet from the district attorney.
Right. All right. So the other thing was the Cash Patel and some of the sparring that took place yesterday. It was almost like you, when you get some of these guys on that have been on the air for a long time, you better be well, if you're going to go after him, you better be ready to get hit back. He was ready to hit back yesterday. And some of the sparring that went on with Cory Booker, do we have some of that? The Cory Booker as well as the one with
Adam Schiff.
I don't know. Do we? Yeah, let's listen to.
I don't think you're fit to be on the bureau. But here's the thing, Mr. Patel. I think you're not going to be around long. I think this might be your last oversight hearing.
That rant of false information does not bring this country together. If you want to work on bringing this country, it's my time, not yours.
My God.
If you want to talk about
dividing this country,
it is my time.
I follow you on your social media posts that tear this country apart. Sir, you don't tell me my time is over. The people of New Jersey tell me what my time is. You can't lecture me.
You can tell me my time's over.
You may be the charge of the FBI.
I'm not going anywhere.
But I am not afraid of you.
I'm not afraid of you, which is probably the most interesting statement after that. But you see a lot of hearings. This wasn't usual, typical.
this wasn't Christopher Wray. Let's just say that.
Right.
You know, traditionally the FBI director in that mold is very quiet and
just takes it,
and moves on, doesn't say anything. Cash Patel is not that kind of FBI director, so he pushes back. You know, and listen, obviously we've seen Senator Booker in big moments try to make a big moment. His speech on the Senate floor, the Spartacus moment.
Yeah.
I mean, there's multiple times. I think the Adam Schiff exchange was kind of really interesting in that, you know, Adam Schiff is a focus of some of the investigation of Crossfire Hurricane and what came out of the House Intelligence Committee. And some of that in that exchange came out from Cash Patel.
So it's good. Just lastly, I think it's also important to bring up what you did last night. You had Senator Fetterman and Senator McCormick on. And that is like an old-fashioned Republican and Democrat. They probably didn't know each other before they both ran for Senate seat. McCormick didn't get past Dr. Oz. Fetterman beats Dr. Oz. The other seat was Casey's. Fetterman came out for Casey. McCormick wins. But these two see eye to eye in a lot. Why was that important for them to call you to come on?
Yeah, it was right after the shooting. It was just a few days. And, you know, everybody was still reeling. And they reached out and said, we want to do a common ground. And I've had both of them on individually with other senators on common ground. So they knew the format. And they wanted to come on together as the senators from Pennsylvania. They wanted to express this message that we need to talk to each other differently. We need to. I thought Fetterman was really pretty eloquent, yeah, about not going down the fascist Hitler road, about saying the left part of his party has been lost, but extremism that gets to violence no matter what it is unacceptable. So we gave him extra time and wanted to have that conversation. I think it was good.
It was good, but you know, there really is nobody. There was Sinema and Manchin, and you had Manchin on yesterday too. His book is really, really insightful. He also talks about you in his book. They called up Brett Baer and says, "I'm telling everyone, I'm not voting for this massive bill." And Brett Baer was so surprised when he came out and said, "I'm against it. I'm out." He writes that in his book. But besides them, they were kind of a relief because I didn't know how they were going to react to anything because they had to be sold. They were looking to see what's best for the country. And we really have on the left right now, you really have only Senator Fetterman.
Yeah, Fetterman is like Manchin with a hoodie. And he's the one who's doing a lot of the reaching over. There's a few that are doing a lot of bipartisan things, but when push comes to shove, they kind of go to their corners. You know, I think there's a hunger for more of that, what we saw last night. And we'll see. We'll see if it develops before 26.
All right, Brett. When is your book coming out?
October 21st. Drops okay. October 21st, and you can pre-order now. BrettBaer.com is one of the spots where it has all the links. But I'm excited. You know, it's funny. You've done all these book tours, and in the wake of Charlie Kirk, you know, we're having all these meetings about security and everything else. But I'm excited to get out there and talk about Teddy Roosevelt.
Yeah, I know you're going to be stopping in Jacksonville, so I know they love you, and they'll be looking forward to getting you there over in northern Florida. Brett Baer, thanks so much. Best of luck. Pick
all
it
right.
up to
we'll
rescue the American spirit. You can't get it yet, but have it land in your inbox or at your house on publishing day. Thanks, Brett. Howie Kurtz at the bottom of the hour, but we'll have a few minutes when we get back. We could squeeze your calls in, 1-866-408-7669.
Want even more, Brian? Download the podcast at BrianKilmeadShow.com. Every episode, exclusive interviews on demand. More of Kilmeade coming up.
This is Jimmy Fallon, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at FoxAcrossAmerica.com.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
We have seen an alleged murder with such specific text messages about the alleged murder weapon, where it was hidden, how it was placed, what was on it. But also, it was very touching in a way that I think many of us didn't expect. A very intimate portrait into this relationship between the suspect's roommate and the suspect himself, with him repeatedly calling his roommate, who is transitioning, calling him my love, and I want to protect you, my love. So it was this duality of someone who the attorney said not only jeopardized the life of Charlie Kirk and the crowd, but was doing it in front of children, which is one of the aggravating circumstances of this case. And on the other hand, he was, you know, speaking so lovingly about his partner. So a very interesting and, as Pierre said, riveting press conference, David.
You know, it's one of those things where if I could quote everybody about Charlottesville, there is no both sides. Hey, Matt Gutman. Nobody was touched. Nobody was touched except for people. And I'm not saying he was. This guy's a good reporter. I've watched him before. But nobody was touched by the exchange. We only care about the motive, the premeditation, and the transitioning partner's role in this, if any. Tut. I mean, I cannot believe that one out. And that he thinks that we care that he's had a loving relationship with a woman, a man that wanted to be a woman. Rob Suave on Fox News at night put this in perspective. He's the Reason editor, senior editor at Reason. Cut 7.
It just sounded awful. Ooh. What he said there, especially because so many fans, friends of Charlie Kirk, and so many people who didn't agree with him, all feeling like seeing these justifications for violence all over social media, and then to make those comments and have it sound like, and I'm not saying this is actually how he feels, but it just sounded like it, Matt Gutman, that he had more sympathy for the alleged killer than for Charlie. And that was tone deaf at best. I'd like to think the cameraman or whoever put together the segment is, you know, wincing at what he said, and it's not reflective of his work and who he is, but it really came off wrong.
I mean, yeah. I mean, they go back and forth, candidly. I mean, this guy, in his words, confessed to the whole thing. Yes, it was me. Yes, I did it. Sorry. It wasn't you, was it? Yes, it was. It was me. Sorry. I'll just paraphrase. I just got to get, the only problem is I would have got away clean and died with this secret to my old age, but I left the gun in a location, and it's my grandfather's gun. My old man's going to kill me. Now, think about this. You act like you left your gun at a rifle tournament. You left your gun in the woods because you just assassinated an innocent person who's making a speech at a college campus. And you're saying, my dad's going to, how do I explain that to my old man that he lost my grandfather's gun? So into the twisted mind of a murderer who's never murdered before. Howie Kurtz is next.
Hey, I'm Trey Gowdy, host of the Trey Gowdy Podcast. I hope you will join me every Tuesday and Thursday as we navigate life together and hopefully find ourselves a little bit better on the other side.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com. A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Do you think the political violence problem on the right is worse than what it is on the left?
I think it's a false comparison in the first place. And I think we should have a leader that is responsible enough to denounce political violence, period. It's not about where it comes from. It's about the fact that it is happening. It is never okay.
He did. I guess she doesn't watch Fox News, Fox and Friends, because he did on Thursday. That is Congresswoman Jasmine Crockett, who might be gerrymandered right out of a district. Howie Kurtz joins us now, Fox News political analyst and media analyst. Howie, always great to have you on. I want to play just some of the reaction and the way people are handling this political violence. First off, there's no doubt about the motive, and there's no doubt that this is a strong case against the alleged assassin. And I find her analysis of the situation, which is going to get worse when I play another soundbite, disappointing. Can you hear me?
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Go ahead.
But you were tossing.
No.
Look, there's absolutely no question that most of the political violence in recent years have been committed by left-wingers. But it's not that Democrats never get this. I mean, just as one example, the burning down of the governor's mansion in Pennsylvania, Democratic Governor Josh Shapiro.
That was by a Palestinian crazy who didn't like the fact that he was Jewish. So that was an attack on a Jewish governor.
Right. But, you know, everybody's got their grievances. I mean, look, my basic gut feeling here is that people who do this, who are attempted assassins or actual assassins, are insane. They're crazy. People who shoot up schools, they're nuts. And I don't care all that much about the motives. I think in political debate, it's fair to point out why somebody wanted to kill Charlie Kirk, who, you know, even those who disagree with him are just deeply, deeply wounded by this. I know I am. It's heartbreaking that he's got two little kids and all of that. But I think others are just sort of trying to capitalize on it so they can get their face on TV or on the radio.
Yeah, I mean, tell me if you can understand this reasoning. Cut 16.
Please tell me who is fostering this gun culture, right? I mean, the reality is that the average person on the left probably couldn't make a shot from 200 yards because they haven't been playing with assault rifles since they were a little kid. Like, that is just the reality of how people on the left typically work.
Do you understand what truth she's grounded in?
Sure, but I think I was as surprised as everybody else. I assume this must be some, you know, expert marksman or something, and, you know, long planning. Well, apparently, according to his own words and the texts that investigators have recovered, he planned this in about a week, and I guess he grew up in a household that had a lot of guns, but I'm not turning this into a, we must do something about guns. There's a lot of things we need to do. But I must say that I tell you what really, really drives me crazy. And I'm sure you've touched on this, Brian. And that is the sickos out there who are celebrating this, who didn't like Charlie Cooker's philosophy for some reason or another. Like, yeah, this is great. He said, and a lot of people have been fired over that, and they should be. I'm not saying you have to say that everything that Charlie Kirk did was completely defensible. If you have a different point of view, fine. But this is unacceptable in America. And people who can't realize that, and actually university professors, far left professors and others, including some journalists, have been fired and should be fired for that kind of twisted mentality.
Yeah, I mean, I hear it. I mean, a person who I think sounds like somebody that you're referring to that got it right is Jamie Lee Curtis. She's not a conservative. She's not a Republican, not close, but listen to her.
I'm going to bring something up with you just because it's front of mind.
Yeah.
Charlie Crist was killed 2 days ago. I'm sorry.
Kirk.
Kirk. I just call him Christ. I think because of Christ, because of his deep, deep belief. But I believe he was a man of faith.
Mm.
And I hope in that moment when he died that he felt connected to his faith, even though I find his ideas were abhorrent to me.
Yeah.
I still believe he's a father and a husband and a man of faith. And I hope whatever connection to God means that he felt it.
You know what it sounds like to me, Howie, is that she saw the video And that's why, in a way, I don't want, in one way, I don't want anyone to see the video. In another way, I want everyone to see the video. Because he isn't just alive one day and dead the next. There's a reason. And the way he died really should scare people into understanding that how much this has got to stop. But your thoughts?
Well, first of all, good for Jamie Lee Curtis. And boy, that was a heartfelt comment, and we need more of that. Secondly, anybody who chooses to see the video, fine. But what's happening is these tech companies, X in particular, are automatically playing it for a lot of people who don't want to see it. And that's just because that's how they make their money, their algorithms and all that. And I think social media has a big burden here because, you know, and they fuel the anger in this country. And there's a lot of anger in this country, and I understand why. But I don't think anybody should be forced to see it against their will.
So I think Discord's got to be under scrutiny. Now, I know this guy didn't cry. I don't know anything about him. I've seen him testify. But I don't know anything. I know he didn't say, let me put up a site that'll allow murderers to talk to each other. But there's a lot of these chat rooms that Kash Patel said yesterday that they are researching, maybe the hundreds, that are really concerning that a lot of this happened. And I'm wondering if there's somebody inciting some of this behavior on that platform in particular, because the Buffalo murderer also from there.
Look, we can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. Social media is a cesspool. There's a lot of toxic stuff on there, particularly for these people who don't even use their real names. They hide behind a screen name, and they would never say something like that to your face. They just wouldn't. But it is so. In a way, it encourages this sort of like online mobs, I guess I would say. But it's not like we're going back to the days. You know, look, what rules now? Radio shows, podcasts. I still like cable TV. It's still how I earn my living at Fox. But I think there's a lot of blame to go around to these Silicon Valley giants.
So I want to talk about Kash Patel, and he was under scrutiny yesterday. He wasn't pulled in front of Oversight Committee. He was scheduled to be there. Mm-hmm. So it just so happened. They were probably going to just grill him on Epstein. But instead, they grilled him on this, the 33 hours it took to get him. A post that he made said they got him, and it was wrong. He should have phrased it differently. He told us on Tuesday, he said, I should have said we have a suspect in custody, obviously. But he wants to be transparent. He wants to be different. And then in 33 hours, they got the guy. But, man, there's some fiery exchanges here. I want you to hear one of them that we haven't played yet. Here's one with Kash Patel and Adam Schiff, cut 28.
Afraid of you.
What I am doing is protecting this country, providing historic reform, and combating the weaponization of intelligence by the likes of you. And we have countlessly proven you to be a liar in Russiagate, in January 6th. You are the biggest fraud to ever sit in the United States Senate. You are a political buffoon at best.
So that was the exchange of a guy that knows how to handle himself in debates, who is the FBI director. That's not Robert Mueller. That's not Christopher Wray. Your thoughts?
Well, look, every Democrat on that committee, and that was a classic example, was trying to get his sound bites played by being even more outraged and angry and so forth. And, you know, it is having covered, you know, hundreds of Capitol Hill hearings. It is a game that both parties play. But it seems like if they're just talking over each other, and Kash Patel at one point gave it right back to him. He wasn't just going to sit there and take this constant stream of abuse from Democratic members. I think it made the Democrats look bad. Mm. It made it look like they were more interested in beating up on Kash Patel than they were in getting any real answers.
Yeah, I'm never getting used to the fact that when you have somebody in front of you, ask questions, wait for the answer. Ask questions, wait for the answer. It looks like speeches and yelling. And I always say at the end of it, what was the point? So, and both sides do that too. Big picture, Howie. I have never, and we probably will never experience again, a president willing to talk about everything at any time, multiple times a day. Also with people around him to capitalize on it, whether he's with a world leader or he's announcing an executive order. Could you express with all your years of experience how different even this Trump term is from any other you've seen?
Actually, it's kind of ironic because, you know, Trump doesn't make any bones about not liking the media coverage of his presidency, which has been, you know, 99% hostile, I would say. And you got the suit yesterday against the New York Times.
$15 billion.
Yeah, $15 billion, suing Wall Street Journal, successfully sued ABC and both CBS. But then he keeps going back to it. In other words, usually the behind the scenes stuff, journalists had to work to get, you know, one or two anonymous sources. It all comes from Trump. All the years I've been doing this, there's always a Trump soundbite. He's even sounding off about NFL games. He doesn't like the new kickoffs. He has an opinion on everything. In other words, it's not just politics. People love that about him. Not everybody loves him, but people love that about him, and that he doesn't, except maybe, you know, in national security, foreign policy stuff, he doesn't dodge the questions. He stops in front of the helicopter. He stops in front of Air Force One. I've never seen a president do any of this. And so the journalists who are beating him up have access that no one in the television age has ever had to a president.
I just don't understand. They should feel, even if you didn't vote for him or never would, if you have a job to do, Joe Biden made it so much harder. You had a press secretary that wasn't well read into any of the policies, just deflecting answers. We knew she didn't have the answers. Now we know she never even barely ever met with him. We knew a president's hand was off the wheel. Who knows if it was ever on? So for 4 years, you really didn't pursue anything. It was Fox and maybe a handful of others who said what's going on with the Ukraine situation, with Hunter's laptop and other things. But for the most part, we said to ourselves, what's going on here? We never see the president. He doesn't give press conferences. We watched the whole campaign fall apart. We found the truth come out. And then you have somebody who is 180 degrees different. Do you think, from the people you know from all your years, that they on some level appreciate the access?
Oh, they love it. And it also gets them on the air. It gets them on the front page and all of that. But a quick, interesting point, if I can briefly say this, which is MSNBC and CNN have stopped covering the Trump pressers. Now, if it's 2 hours, I can understand, you know, getting out at some point. But Fox carries them all. And I think, but he always makes news. He always makes,
yeah,
at 23 hours a day, you say whatever hell you want. But when the president of the United States comes on, and it's, you know, it's not just like he's giving speeches. He's taking questions from journalists, invariably making news. They've decided they don't want to give him that platform. Then they'll talk about, for the next 23 hours, all the news that the president made.
I did not know that. I should flip around more. I did not know that. Howie Kurtz, thanks so much. Always appreciate it. Congratulations on an unbelievable run on your Sunday show, and I look forward to seeing you all over the channel on our show, too.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Listen, 1-866-408-7669. A lot going on. The President of the United States is in the UK. He's having lunch, we think, still with the King and the Queen, along with First Lady Melania Trump. Then they're going to have dinner tonight. There'll be executive time in between, but it was really impressive. If you have a chance to go to Fox News Digital and watch some of the pomp and circumstances from earlier today, you won't regret it. It is like a time capsule, like we're back to the 1800s. You're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
This is Jason Chaffetz from the Jason in the House podcast. Join me every Monday to dive deeper into the latest political headlines and chat with remarkable guests.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com
or wherever you download podcasts.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I'm married to Luigi's AI. I'm not kidding. I talk to him every day. He's like my best friend. We plan like a whole future together. We named our kids together.
Do you consider him a hero?
Yes, 100%.
But he's charged with murder.
Oh, well, we're hoping in a glimmer of hope that that changes.
And yesterday he did get somewhat of a victory. They dropped the terrorism charges on him. But did you hear that first one? I mean, I can't emphasize this enough. I have married the AI image of Luigi, however you say that. And we talk every day. And I guess this, they could come up with it where they talk every day and they plan their future together. Do you believe this? It used to be maybe people fantasized about it. Or they write letters to prison. But now you don't need to do that. So you just have an AI replica. So Luigi continues to be looked at. He has these mutants outside cheering the fact that terrorism charges were dropped as his supporters went crazy outside Manjo, and he still faces state and federal murder charges, which include which would include the death penalty if convicted. But this is what the judge said. The people presented sufficient evidence that the defendant murdered Brian Thompson in a premeditated and calculated execution. That does not mean that the defendant did so with terroristic intent. The defendant's apparent objective, as stated in his writings, was not to threaten, intimidate, or coerce, but rather to draw attention to what he perceived as the greed of the insurance industry. My question is, as a human being, if you're going after the insurance industry, you don't have any beef with this company, you just targeted that conference and decided you could follow him the easiest. You don't have anything against Brian Thompson. Brian Thompson, the CEO of I think, U.S. Healthcare, I'm not sure, but one of those healthcare companies. You were looking for a healthcare CEO to make a statement that you feel as though people were not getting a good deal from healthcare in this country or from insurance companies in this country. I don't know. Isn't that a terroristic threat against all insurance companies? He's still got stalking, travel to interstate commerce, stalking, use of interstate facilities, murder through use of firearms offense, New York State, first-degree murder, second-degree murder. So he's got to handle that. But to see him out there with this new haircut, obviously he's lifting weights in prison, being treated like a rock star. And as people have pointed out to me, in New York, if they get the wrong jury, all you need is one to say, oh, that video of him shooting Brian Thompson in the back? So what? I think he's innocent. Really? I think he's innocent. So there you go. He could walk away. I mean, then the federal charges would come in and they have to retry him, but who knows where that'll go. In a time in which way too many people cheer the death of Charlie Kirk, and now you have somebody cheering for the killer of the CEO of a healthcare company, in a way, this is really surreal. So we'll continue to follow that as well. Just a quick announcement. Coming up on the 27th, I'm going to be in Richmond, Virginia. I want everyone to grab your tickets. And, of course, it was streaming on Fox Nation, History, Liberty, and Laughs. It's going to be motivational, inspirational, as well as patriotic. And then coming up on November 1st in Pottstown, Pennsylvania, also be on stage there. Fox Nation will be sponsoring, perhaps streaming, and I think that'll be important. A little bit later today, Kash Patel is going to go in front of the House Oversight Committee, at which time, you know, these Democrats are going to look to make headlines. My hope is, if you have tough questions for the FBI director, why are these people let go? What about this posting? I think you also have to say, I salute you. You've got more people off the most wanted list in 8 months than Joe Biden got in 4 years. Look at all the people that you've helped round up. Look at how you brought crime to a heel in Washington, D.C., and what you plan on doing in Chicago and Memphis. People would listen to your criticism if you also point out how good he's doing in other areas, in your view. And by the way, my sources say Kash Patel is fine. Sorry, Cory Booker. He's not going anywhere.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. It's going to be a big hour. We have with us in studio, we're going to have Yuval David's going to be with us too, pushing back on some of the negativity we heard coming out of the Emmys, which got huge ratings, by the way. He's a celebrated Emmy Award winning actor himself, fighting for Israel. NYPD Chief of the Department, John Schell, is going to be with us in a matter of moments, too. They have some encouraging numbers when it comes to crime, although it's something that's still got to be attacked comprehensively. It would help if they were able to get their force at least 2,000 more people. And we are monitoring with the situation with the crackdown that's happening in various cities as the president wants to bring law and order back to America. Can you imagine? Some people find that statement controversial. So before we get to the chief, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
It's my time, not yours.
My God.
If you want to talk about
dividing this country,
it is
my
time.
I follow you on your social media posts that tear this country apart. Sir, you don't tell me my time is over. You can't lecture me.
Yeah, your time was over. That's what the cavil's for. Your time is over. That is the performance of Senator Cory Booker going up against Kash Patel. It's the Kash clash. The FBI director personally attacked, but unlike most, attacked back and defines the threats today and the hunt that was involved to get the Kirk killer.
Number two.
The federal government not communicating with the city what they're doing causes, well, fear. And to be honest with you, it may cause real challenges for local law enforcement trying to do their jobs.
Well, what they got to do their jobs better, and you got to fully support them, or else you wouldn't need federal troops. Crime crackdown not stopping. Moving into Chicago and predictably Memphis. The city in Chicago, though, is pushing back, unlike Memphis, against the help that they have coming their way for free.
Number one.
After shooting Mr. Kirk, Robinson hid the gun, discarded the clothing, and told his roommate to delete incriminating text messages.
That is Jeff Gray, in Provo, Utah, yesterday. The officer in charge and the attorney general in charge of telling everybody what they have so far. Charlie Kirk's assassination investigation releases a mountain of information and evidence about the mindset of the killer, and while it revealed, what it revealed, and who may still be involved. A guy that's used to unwinding a lot of cases like this, NYPD Chief of Department John Schell. John, your reaction as a human being from what you saw last week?
Completely horrific, tragic. Charlie Kirk, by all accounts, a religious man, a good man, and doing what he loved to do, just have healthy debate with people, and someone with an animus and grievous towards him killed him. Words can't describe what we saw and what this country is going through right now, and it's really, it's sad to see.
So John, for the longest time, you want to sit down with a Bill Bratton, someone like yourself, or Ray Kelly, and find out what you're doing to stop Islamic extremism and having another attack like 9/11, which you guys have done in studying all that, the activities, traveling overseas. It's been unbelievable. But now we seem to possibly have a different threat coming from the inside, and it might be one of the most dangerous people is some insular person who finds themselves living life on a keyboard. Have you guys adjusted to that threat?
So you're referring to what we call the lone wolf. How do we adjust to the young person in their garage, in their basement, in mommy's bedroom, on the keyboard, doing or thinking what they want to do? We have a very big intelligence bureau here that works nationally, worldwide. We're all our federal partners, and we do everything we can to capture a lone wolf. We have a leads division where we follow up on every lead that we receive in the NYPD or our federal partners share with us, and vice versa. The lone wolf is really, really difficult. And the way you really combat it is everyone knows of a lone wolf. And we always say this often, and sometimes it gets a little monotonous, but it really does work when you see something, just say something. If something does not seem right to you, I'm a firm believer that your first reaction is normally the right reaction. Just act on it, 911, telecop, say something. I'd rather be wrong at that level than to be wrong completely and we missed it.
But how about embedding yourself in these communities? Do you have to do that and pretend as if you care like these gamers care in Discord? Do you put, remember you put officers sometimes try to infiltrate the mob. But now online, do you try to have some of your men and women jump online who might know the language of some of these people that are, in this case, gamers, and in another case, might be extremists in different ways?
Absolutely. That's built into our intel world in the NYPD. We have many analysts that look at this, that flag things for us, that becomes a lead for us, and then we have to follow up, whether it be locally, like I said, or nationally. So that's built into our apparatus, because there's no other way to proceed now. We have people who have grievances towards, say, Luigi Mangione to the pharmaceutical world, grievances towards a person who wanted to just have healthy debate, and they think that the grievance now is, can be solved by violence. Obviously, that's not the case, but it seems like it's getting worse, and to your point, we just have to be keep getting better and better at communicating, not that we're doing it bad, but keep that communication flowing, keep those analysts working, tell our public, see something, say something, get into those communities, and just have your ear to the ground.
So Luigi Mangione went in front of a judge yesterday to try to get a charge dismissed, and he was successful. Outside of the courtroom, this is what some people were saying outside the courtroom about Luigi Mangione, a guy that is, I know you have to say alleged, but we watched him on camera shoot the CEO, Brian Thompson, in the back, three blocks from where I am right now. Listen to this.
I'm married to Luigi's AI. I'm not kidding. I talk to him every day. He's like my best friend. We plan like a whole future together. We named our kids together.
Do you consider him a hero?
Yes, 100%.
But he's charged with murder.
Oh, well, we're hoping in a glimmer of hope that changes.
I mean, what do you say to that? I don't remember a murderer being celebrated ever.
I saw this yesterday. I saw the outside of the courtroom yesterday. And the first thing I said is, as a parent, as a father, as a cop, where were these kids raised? Where were they indoctrinated to have this mentality? I mean, we know that some of this is out there, but yesterday, for me personally, that just went to another level for me. And I don't know what to say other than where did these kids grow up? What is lacking in their world that they think along these lines? It is absolutely scary to what I saw yesterday, what you just maybe listened to.
Well, I'll tell you. Yeah, I want to get to the New York stats because they are pretty strong. But I also want to talk about what's happening in Memphis. The president's going to send in resources into Memphis, the number one murder capital for violent crime in the country. And now he also is at the same time starting his second week of operations without any cooperation. You guys can't cooperate either with in Chicago. And I want you to hear Governor Pritzker about the fact that you have ICE operating, you have Border Patrol operating, FBI investigating, trying to crack down on a perennial crime capital of Chicago. I want you to hear J.P. Pritzker.
They are causing it. It is the president. It is Kristi Noem, who wasn't even willing to answer questions today. She was here for a few hours, unwilling to answer questions about what they're doing on the ground, unwilling to tell us what ICE is going to do over the next coming weeks.
So he's complaining. He's made ICE the enemy. He's trying to mobilize people against law enforcement.
Look, Brian, I don't get involved in the politics of things. I think I would like to think the intent by everyone here should be public safety and how do we keep our cities and towns and villages safe. What is it going to take? In terms of the NYPD, yes, we are bound by sanctuary cities. We cannot partake in any kind of civil enforcement whatsoever. Those are the rules bestowed upon us. But in terms of criminal investigations, we work with all our federal partners very well in New York City, better than anyone else in this world. And it's all under the banner of keeping people safe. That's what's just, again, disturbing to hear. What are we talking about here? I don't want to talk politics about this in terms of what I hear in the news. For me as a cop and a citizen of the city, I just want to keep it as safe as I can with everything we got to offer. When I say we, our federal partners, our other jurisdictions, our Amtrak police, our Port Authority police, NYPD, you name it. We just want to keep people safe, and that's what we try to do here.
So New York City, the crime has dropped 6% in terms of murder, 17% in terms of robberies, 9% in felony assaults, 5% in burglaries. It dropped 10% in grand larcenies, 9% major felonies. The only place you increase is rapes. At this time last year, you had 129. Now you're up to 160. How would you describe the situation, Chief?
Well, for number one, we are clearly understaffed by quite a few thousand cops, and our numbers look good as you compare it to the crime adjustment that was made that in 2022 based on bail reform. So based on bail reform, everything changed in 2022. We were slowed down for COVID 2 years. So based on the new crime number, yes, we are down almost 5%. Our shooting numbers are at historic lows. Our homicides, we're competing for one of the best years. So understaffed, we have a very good executive team. We know what we're doing here. Cops are working extremely hard. We're working with our federal partners. We're taking down gang cases. So we're doing the best we can with what we have. And those are numbers. Now we have that. We always talk about the perception piece. How do people feel in the city? Well, it's hard to find out what that is, 8 million people, but we're also harping on quality of life. transit choir life. It's a very big endeavor in the biggest city in the United States, but we're getting it done. A long way to go, though. We're trying to get more, 1,000 more cops. We're doing that. So it's a task. It's not easy.
It's hard filling up an academy, right?
Yeah, at the academy, we're starting to put in, so Police Commissioner Tisch made some adjustments with the mayor to lower the college credits to 24. We're getting many more applicants coming in. We had the last couple of classes over 1,000, which is good. The net gain is not great because you do have people retiring. So we're getting more cops. It's just going to take a while to get where we want to be. And now we got to maintain that.
If this guy's Orem Emdani, who's got a career of not liking and respecting law enforcement, is that going to make everything harder?
Well, look, at the end of the day, whoever the mayor is going to be, the cops, we all took an oath. We don't really concern ourselves too much with that. We have a job to do, and everyone knows what the job is, and we fight it every day, 24/7, 365. And, you know, we're the best in the business, and we'll continue with that posture. We'll continue with that mentality, and we can handle anything thrown our way. We're just good at it.
If they decide to flood federal resources into New York City, what will you do?
Well, look, you know, we're 34,400 strong. We know what we're doing. We've proven we know what we're doing. You know, we have this. But if they were sent to us and forced upon us, then we would just factor them into our plan and keep this city safe. But as of right now, we got this. We know what we're doing.
Does National Guard help?
Well, anytime. So if you recall, Brian, last year, we had the National Guard in our transit system.
Yes.
Governor Hochul gave us the National Guard. So anytime you could layer security, right? Layer security with just that omnipresence. It's going to help. You know, if you got in the transit last year, Times Square, we had the National Guard standing there. If you're going to do something wrong, you're like, well, I'm not doing it here. Look at these guys standing here. So just the omnipresence alone is a crime prevention tool that we use, aside from going hands-on and making arrests in the intel world and things of that nature.
All right, Chief, stay safe. I know that, you know, every day is a challenge here, and now you have the UN coming in next week. What kind of challenge is that in terms of numbers?
Huge. I'm actually sitting in front of the UN as we speak. And when you look at the 80th UN General Assembly, first you got to take in the context of what's going on in the world, right? We've had assassination attempts on our president the last couple of years. We have the governor of Pennsylvania try to burn his house down. We have conflicts overseas. We've had about 7 embassy attacks in the last 2 years. Now we have these people with grievances, these lone wolves kind of pop up. We have all this going on as we have 240 heads of state coming in next week, which is going to be a large week. 8.5 million people walking around from traffic to our venues and hotels and motorcades. It's all hands on deck for the NYPD next week. Every asset we have, harbor, aviation, counterterrorism, intel, we have no choice but to secure the city. And UNGA makes it difficult for us. But we've done before, and we'll do it again.
I know you will. Chief Schell, John Schell, thanks so much. Always appreciate it.
Brian, my pleasure. Have a great day.
Yep. Always working the streets in New York City. Never easy. Every day is a challenge. 1-866-408-7669. You just got a full dose of how to handle crime in America. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Don't go anywhere. Brian Kilmeade will be right back. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I was very, very upset that someone's life was taken because they have a different opinion. It's just unbelievable. I mean, this was a great communicator, a great advocate for the right, for Republican causes, and he had such a great way of communicating with the students that agreed or disagreed with him. And I just thought about it's a human being. A human life is gone. And he was a great father, a great husband. I was thinking about his children. They will only be reading about him now instead of him reading to them bedtime stories.
Right. Arnold sees a country going into crisis, and he's starting to step up again. Here's more from his conversation at USC, Cut 20.
I think that since then there are endless amount of debates about How do we stop this? But we have to acknowledge that the cause of all of this is the social media companies that are dividing us, the mainstream media companies that are dividing us, the political parties, the Democrats, that are dividing us, the Republicans, that are dividing us. So we're getting hit from so many different angles. And we have to be very careful that we don't get any closer to that cliff. Because when you fall down that cliff, down there, there is no democracy.
Right. Don't make a turn for the worst. He, specifically in California, is pushing back against Governor Gavin Newsom's push to get rid of the independent council that decides on districting in California. As you know, there's about 7 seats that are Republican. Gavin Newsom, to counter the gerrymandering in Texas, thinks he's going to do that in California. He's got to put that to a referendum to temporarily suspend the independent council. Well, he's got to deal with Arnold and Kevin McCarthy raising money against it. Gavin Newsom's got a great opportunity. He could have stood up and said, hey, I was reaching across the aisle. I talked to Charlie Kirk. It turns out he did tell somebody that, you know, he was my first interview. He said that he flew across the country on his own dime to do the interview. On my podcast, this could be Gavin Newsom. And I listened to what he had to say, and I realized how sincere he was. Instead, Bill Maher could compliment him, but Gavin Newsom, for what I could tell, didn't really even compliment him. He said he stayed in touch with me and my staff. This is a great opportunity to look like a statesman. Instead, he wants to punch you in the mouth. Remember? A guy that never punched anybody. When we come back, Emmy Awards got 7.8 million viewers, but some of the award winners stood out for their filthy mouths.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
We all prefer that this end was a negotiated settlement that lead to the release of every single hostage, both alive and deceased, that leads to the demilitarization and disarming of Hamas, so they can no longer pose a threat, not just to Israel, but everyone. We think Qatar could play a very key role in that. We don't want to see anything that undermines that. So that's why we added it to the trip.
That is the Secretary of State, Marco Rubio. He went to meet with the Qatari leaders, but he also met with Benjamin Netanyahu, went to some historic sites, and I'm sure had substantive conversations. It looks like Netanyahu did meet with the press and said, I've been invited back to the White House in the last 2 weeks. And any type of friction that may have existed after the hit in Doha doesn't seem to be lingering, at least with President Trump. Did he, in fact, know what was going to happen in Doha, taking a shot at Hamas leadership on the eve of what would have been perhaps, but of course, all the last deals have been falling apart, a hostage deal that would have released about half of them? Yuval David's been working on this his entire life, especially since the October 7th attack. He's a journalist, political activist, an Emmy Award-winning actor, host, director, and filmmaker. Yuval is back in studio. So, Yuval, the Doha hit, do you think it was necessary? Some people say it derailed getting some hostages out.
I do think that it absolutely derailed getting hostages out, but I also think that everything that Israel does derails getting hostages out because Hamas tries to find any excuse to not release the hostages. This has been going on since October 7th, 2023. If Hamas really wanted to negotiate and have peace, they would have released all of the hostages immediately. But they're using the hostages, including the bodies of dead hostages, as pawns in some sort of game to continue to ensure that they have power.
And in Doha, they are outraged that they hit inside their country.
Sure. They should be outraged that they were hit inside the country. But what else is Israel supposed to do? Israel should, and I completely support Israel's trying to go after every Hamas leader and eradicating them. Hamas is a threat not just to Israel, but also to Gazans themselves and to the entire Middle East. And as we see Hamas supporters around the world supporting Islamic terror, I think that's wild. We need to eradicate Hamas, and I support Israel's action.
So right now, there's a major operation in Gaza City. They say thousands are being displaced because they got flyers that said, get out, we're going in. So this is going to be, it looks like the end of the operation. They've surrounded the city. That's where the Hamas leadership is. What worries you most about it?
What worries me most is that people think it's going to be the end, but it's not the end. This war seems to have no end in sight. Until Hamas is not eradicated and until every hostage isn't released, how is this war going to end? That is what's frightening. The fact that Israeli soldiers are being wounded and are dying with the numbers, it seems like every week in the news in Israel, there's another soldier who, 18, 19, 20-year-old, who's dying and fighting for his or her country. This is exhausting. The Israeli population is exhausted by this war, and people need to recognize that Israel is the only democracy in the Middle East. It's the only country in the Middle East that has freedom of religion, that has free expression, that allows people to run for office or protest against the government. Israel wants to just have a normal life in a democracy like we have here. That is what exhausts me. And then, of course, there are innocent people in Gaza who are also being targeted and are also being killed. I don't want to see anybody die. The ones I do want to see die are Hamas. Right.
And they're probably all holed up in Gaza City. A lot of times they go into hospitals and schools. That's the problem with targeting them. Hannah Einbinder, somebody who was won an Emmy Award for Best Supporting Actress in What Is Moved Hacks, is the series that she's in. So she wins an award and uses this her great moment to say this.
I just want to say, finally, go Birds, and Free Palestine. Thank you.
Right, that was F ICE and Free Palestine. And then she doubled and tripled down on it. She says, as a Jewish person, it's incumbent on her to speak up.
Sure. As a Jewish person, it's incumbent on her to speak up because Jewish people and Jewish tradition and faith, we are supposed to care about civil rights, social justice, and human rights. But what she does is, in the name of her Jewish identity, she practices performative politics and spreads misinformation where she says that it's perfectly acceptable for her as a Jew to be against Israel, to be anti-Zionist. In Judaism, every Shabbat, every Friday night, we have prayers about the land. We have prayers about our indigeneity. Every Jewish holiday has prayers and information that we share and stories that we share about the land and about our indigeneity. Every Jewish holiday talks about that. So for her to say that, according to her, or as a Jew, as she says, I hate when I hear somebody say as a Jew because I have a feeling that something stupid is going to come out of her mouth. And that's exactly what happened. I mean, she just celebrates this moral posturing as if she is on a platform where she must share something about the world. But what information and education does she have? She's funny. Hacks is a great show. I really think it's a great show. She, as a human being and as a person, I think is a morally reprehensible person.
Well, I certainly don't agree with her, I'll tell you that. I know nothing about her, but Hamas praised you. If Hamas praises your speech, just know you're probably on the wrong side. And the cover of the New York Post 2 days ago, you know, Hamas praised and they put her picture up. But you know what they did? They blurred out her chest. You know why? She was wearing a dress that showed skin. So we're going to praise her while making sure everybody knows if you worship Hamas, don't expect to wear anything like this.
Look, the New York Post quoted me in my statements in that article. I was honored to be quoted in that, as I really try to share truth. I try to spread factual information and combat people who are spreading propaganda. Hannah claims to have friends in Gaza. What about her friends who are Jewish? What about her friends who are conservative? I mean, something that we're seeing is this performative outrage that's coming out of Hollywood only exists for specific people. But where's the outrage when Jewish people, conservatives, or centrists are targeted? Hollywood only condemns hate when it fits their script. And that's a problem. She's sharing an obvious script without information beyond those lines that she shared.
And one person has been strong, not as strong as you, Yuval David, from your community, your former job for now in Hollywood, is Jerry Seinfeld. He's been speaking up, visiting Israel, getting backlash, getting protested. You're protesting the most neutral man in the world. And you're protesting him at comedy clubs, screaming out. Sometimes he's getting pushback, and he doesn't care. Well, he's pushing out. How much does that mean?
I think it means a lot for Jerry Seinfeld to speak up and to use his massive platform and fame to do what is morally correct. And he even talks about the fact that we should have conversations, but where it's appropriate to have a conversation and where it's not. Jerry Seinfeld in his shows makes fun of the people who try to protest him in the middle of his show, saying, oh, yes, of course, this is an exact place where we should have political conversations. He makes fun of them because people think that they need to have the right to interrupt other people in other places in life to talk about politics.
And he said, too, he described the Free Palestine movement as an anti-Semitic and compared to the Ku Klux Klan. And he did it at Duke University, where his kids went to school, where he was a commencement speaker, and he got protested then, or hisses, and he got it again. But he does not care. He says, I really feel empathy for the Israeli people, and I know he doesn't want to get political, but he does speak when asked about this, but I'm sure he doesn't want to be known for this. He sees some of the backlash that people have gotten in the past. I'll give you an example. It's Alec Baldwin. You know, he takes a position, a left-wing position, but he embarrasses himself because he's uneducated about all this stuff and just screams and loses his temper. But is Seinfeld risking things? He's probably risking maybe his place, or is he so secure like Jon Voight that he could say whatever he wants and no one can touch him?
Well, I think that Jerry Seinfeld is probably much more secure than Jon Voight in terms of his massive wealth and success that he's achieved. But something I noticed with Seinfeld is he was actually very silent about this until his comedy shows started to get interrupted. When it started to affect him in his shows, he then started speaking up. So he wasn't practicing this performative activism within his shows or within his career until people started targeting him. Why would people target Jerry Seinfeld in the name of Gaza, yeah, in the name of the Palestinian movement, in the name of Israel? Because Jerry Seinfeld is a Jew? That's exactly why Jerry Seinfeld, yeah, was targeted and forced into this conversation.
He says, by saying free Palestine, you're not admitting what you really think. So it's actually compared to the Ku Klux Klan. I'm actually thinking the Klan is actually a little better because they come right out and said, we don't like blacks. We don't like Jews. Okay, that's honest. Why don't you guys be honest? So he's just calling people out, doubling, tripling down, because, you know, he's confident that he's on the right side here, and I think it's great. But they did a recent study among Democrats, and they said, do you support Israel's offensive into Gaza? Only 9% in support. Does that surprise you? When almost 50 to 60% of the votes, the Democratic votes, of Jewish Americans go to Democrats.
I think that that's a very big problem when we look at what is happening within the Democratic Party. There are so many Jews in the United States, including myself as a former Democrat, who understood that part of my American Jewish identity included being part of the Democratic Party.
Because Harry Truman was the one to recognize Israel and he was a Democrat? Is that the reason?
That's the reason. But if you even look back at how the Democratic Party courted Jews to join them, it was back in the late 1930s and early 1940s, when the Democratic Party wanted to have more power and they were courting the unions. Well, Jews in America didn't have the same rights and protections in the workplace as other people did, so they joined unions. They even created unions. And when the Democratic Party courted the unions to gain more clout, that's when Jews, quote unquote, historically, and I'm doing air quotes, joined the Democratic Party. So when people say that Jews historically have been part of the Democratic Party, we have to understand why and when. But also, we must remember that the Democratic Party was the party of the KKK. The Democratic Party was the party that empowered the teachers, Jim Crow, empowered the teachers' union to make sure that there's one specific narrative of Americans and white supremacy across the country. The Democratic Party was the party that supported segregation. So sure, parties can change, things can change, and absolutely they should, but we need to really recognize the Democratic Party for what it is. I had a wake-up call when I recognized far too much posturing and far too much allowance and acceptance of anti-Semitism, especially when it's masked as anti-Israel or anti-Zionism.
I have a sense that they can get through Gaza and get Hamas eradicated from that area. You're going to see the popularity of Israel come back, and I think there'll be people and nations ready to expand the Abraham Accords. It's how it ends. Will be important in what happens after Hamas is no longer ruling there and no longer feared by everyone. Yuval David, thanks so much. Best of luck. What's your next big event? What should people know if they want to follow you or help you out?
Definitely follow me across social media, because the hate that I get is insane just for speaking up and speaking my mind. So you can find me all across social media at Yuval David. There aren't that many Yuval Davids out there. And I'm speaking at churches and synagogues across the country, helping empower people to be activists and advocates. It is our civic duty as Americans to try to make this country as best as it can be for us, for our families, for our communities. And my goal is to empower all Americans to do so.
Yuval David, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
I'm Janice Dean. Join me every Sunday as I focus on stories of hope and people who are truly rays of sunshine in their community and across the world.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
I'm consistent on about that. You know, any kinds of extreme rhetoric, left or right, is really dangerous. And now it's just... Luigi had his latest thing, and now there's people on the very left on my side cheering him and raised over $1 million for his legal fund. It's like this coward executed a father and a businessman just because you happen to disagree with his business. Now that's, you know, keep having these kinds of arguments. Well, guess what? The next one's going to be on you, and you'll end up on the sidewalk. Then we have to just. It's just unacceptable, and we have to just absolutely turn the heat down.
Senator Fetterman and Senator McCormick, who are doing events together, and for, just to be totally candid, I called up Senator McCormick, who's a friend of our show's, good friend of our guys, when he was going against Dr. Oz. I met with him, had lunch with him. It was tough because I'm friends with Dr. Oz, and I don't endorse anyone anyway, but I had to tell him, it's like, I'm really pulling for Dr. Oz, but I looked at his background, West Point graduate, wrestler in college. He comes out to be a self-made multimillionaire, a fantastic investor, and then decides, you know what? I'm going to give it all up at the height of my career, and I want to do public service again. So he lost and then won. And then he meets with Fetterman. He's a Democrat, and he says, we got to do some events together. And they've defended each other multiple times in a battleground state. And I hope Fetterman gets to run again. And this is a guy who had a stroke, remember? Hi, everyone, and good night. He opened up his debate against Dr. Oz, and it looked like this guy should win by a mile, Dr. Oz, but it turns out that Fetterman had more Democratic support, and they never thought Dr. Oz was on Pennsylvania. Well, McCormick does win and beats Casey, and now they're tight, and they have a great message. So I asked them to both come on our show and on television. They said, we're working on it. And then he called up, those guys both called up Bret Baier yesterday and said, at this point, we should come on together and express how we're going to go across the aisle. I would love more people to do that. I did not know this either. There's only three states where a Democrat and Republican have one Democrat and one Republican senator. Rest, it's all Democrats or all Republicans. The next one that's going to go, I think, is Georgia. I mean, that's a Republican state with two Democratic senators because we had the wrong candidates there. The Republicans had the wrong candidates there. I think that if they find the right one through the primary process, down goes Ossoff. But that'll be a place where they gain. I think New Hampshire could be a place where they gain. But Republicans are going to have to work hard to hold on, and that's going to be key. I also think what I saw yesterday is going to go a long way to getting rid of the conspiracy theories when it comes to what happened with Charlie Kirk. And I'll give you an example. Here's a little of Judge Tony Kraft. He is telling you this. I want to bring you inside the courtroom in case you missed it. This is how it sounded as the defendant was introduced in charge. Cut 9.
The defendant knowingly created a great risk of death to another individual other than Charlie Kirk and the defendant. Notice conviction of this offense may carry the death penalty or pursuant to Utah Code 763-207.7, a mandatory term of imprisonment for life without parole, or an indeterminate term of not less than 25 years.
So he's reading a lot of what he's up against. And he sat there in a suicide vest, a suicide prevention vest, and he took it and he looked dead in the eyes. Now, look, he thought he was going to live to an old age, but I guess he wrote the note confessing to the crime to his lover because he thought in case they got killed, he'll have an explanation. Here's more. Cut 10.
I am filing a notice of intent to seek the death penalty. I do not take this decision lightly, and it is a decision I have made independently as county attorney, based solely on the available evidence and circumstances and nature of the crime. Because we are seeking the death penalty, the defendant will continue to be held without bail in the Utah County Jail.
So that's what's going on. And Jeff Gray has gone into great detail at the press conference. Here's an example, cut 11.
After shooting Mr. Kirk, Robinson hid the gun, discarded the clothing he wore when he fired the rifle, and told his roommate to delete incriminating text messages and not talk to police. Immediately after the shot was fired, a camera captures the suspect running across the roof, carrying an item whose shape is consistent with a rifle.
And also, we know he worked with a limp because he had the rifle down his pants. So the partner says to Robinson, "You weren't the one who did this, right?" Robinson says back, "I am. I am sorry. I had enough of his hatred. Some hate can't be negotiated." Can't get more guilty than that.
I'm Emily Campagno. This week on the Fox True Crime Podcast, I'm joined by attorney and spokesperson for the Friends of Amanda Knox Organization, Anne Bremner, who's featured in the new Fox Nation special, Framed.
Listen and follow now at foxtruecrime.com.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
So glad you're there. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show, coming to you from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, around the world. In a matter of moments, Bill McGurn, former speechwriter for President Bush, and now Wall Street Journal columnist, will be joining us, and that'll be great. We're also, this hour, we're going to be joined by Elise Stefanik. She wants to be the next governor of New York. As a Republican, never easy. George Pataki did it three times. But since then, nothing. And now so many Republicans have left the state. Certainly the city, it's gotten tougher and tougher. But the other issue is the thing that gives her hope is that Zeldin got close, and the upstate New York is getting redder and redder. And Long Island is from very, very Republican, where it was. And Staten Island has always been an enclave, but it's the dense New York City that has always delivered it for Democrats. And this time, Governor Kathy Hochul made a ridiculous move endorsing candidate Zohra Mamdani. Before we get to Bill, let's get to the big three.
Number three. It's my time, not yours.
My God.
If you want to talk about
dividing this country,
it is
my
time.
I follow you on your social media posts that tear this country apart. Sir, you don't tell me my time is over. You can't lecture me.
That is Senator Cory Booker, outraged that Kash Patel can use his voice and not just take a verbal beating during the exchange. It's called the Kash Clash. The FBI director personally attacked, but unlike most, attacked back. We'll discuss it.
Number two.
The federal government not communicating with the city what they're doing causes, well, fear. And to be honest with you, it may cause real challenges for local law enforcement trying to do their jobs.
Governor J.B. Pritzker of Illinois wants Chicago to be, I guess, a haven for criminals because they have a crime crackdown and it's not stopping. They're into Chicago now for a couple of weeks and they're trying to get rid of the illegal immigrant criminals and bring some order to the streets, even though J.B. Pritzker, I guess, wants to handle it himself, which he has shown he can't.
Number one.
After shooting Mr. Kirk, Robinson hid the gun, discarded the clothing, and told his roommate to delete incriminating text messages.
He may have, but it was put back together. That is Jeff Gray of Provo, Utah. He's going to be prosecuting and asking for the death penalty. Charlie Kirk's assassination investigation releases a, no other way to say it, a mountain of information over the course of 45 minutes. It's evidence and the mindset of the killer. How do we know? It's in print or it's on the screen. It's digital, but we know it and we have it. While it's revealing, we got to know what, who else, if anybody else, was involved. Let's bring in Bill McGurn, Fox News contributor, Main Street columnist for The Wall Street Journal. Bill, welcome back. It's been a crazy 2 weeks. Could you put in perspective what this assassination reminds you of in recent American history? Any moment, any time, any incident?
It doesn't remind me of anything because I think the way it hit and who Charlie Kirk was, I wasn't his best friend. I mean, I knew him. I met him a few times. I thought he's a good guy. In death, I've come to see how extraordinary he was because it turns out my children were fans of his. He reached people that other people didn't reach. And from what I've seen, there's been a lot of clips of Charlie on TV. He was always civil and generally optimistic and was not rude to the people he invited to debate him and so forth. And I think people really were attracted to that. It's so sad.
So having said that, the fact that we know that he's not from a gang, he's not from the projects,
right.
He had options, he had a strong upbringing, unbelievable boards getting into college, got a scholarship. something happened. If you look back on the pandemic years, he only lasts a semester, ends up being buried in his computer. He had an electrician job. He loses that job. We try to get anecdotes from when he worked, when they brought up politics. One point, one of his coworkers said he went into the laundry room and just sat there by himself because most of the people on the job were conservative. So he didn't want to hear it. And Charlie Kirk was, I guess, too much for him to handle. One of the lines was, I had the opportunity to take out Charlie Kirk, and I'm going to take it. And then he went on to say, I had enough of his hatred. Some hate can't be negotiated out. So I hate to say it, but I'm not saying that everybody I hear that from is a murderer, but I hear that from the other side a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you do. I mean, it's so ironic that Charlie Kirk is attacked for his statement stuff when he's trying to have a dialogue. He literally let people come up to a microphone and ask him questions. I think that's what we want to do, rather than all these other groups that just call you names, try to categorize you as a fascist or something. And it's just name calling and emoting. He tried to reach them with argument and stuff. And I can see the appeal. I can see why my kids, respected him and replied to that kind of message he was sending.
So Bill McGurn's our guest. So Bill, like it or not, I don't think that Democrats want anyone killed, but I think that people are getting that message and attacking. I look at Steve Scalise, for example, two assassination attempts on Trump, for example. People point to Governor Shapiro. That was anti-Semitism. That was a pro-Palestinian who wanted to kill a Jewish governor who happened to be a Democrat. And yet we get people who are insisting that this guy's Republican. Listen to, like, for example, Jimmy Kimmel. Cut 18.
We hit some new lows over the weekend with the MAGA gang desperately trying to characterize this kid who murdered Charlie Kirk as anything other than one of them and doing everything they can to score political points from it.
I mean, number one, that's a mischaracterization. No one's scoring political points. They're pointing it out that they're outraged. And number two is that spin. You can't just say a guy on the left got militarized.
I think they can't just say that. The reason is, It's a quasi-religion, and the first tenet is that the evil people are conservatives. And when they get facts that contradict that, they just can't deal with it. And they have word games and all sorts of new labels and say you're just as bad as we are. Yes, there have been right-wingers that have killed people, but I think the hate coming out is more prevalent on the left now. And I don't think the Democrats want people assassinated. But however, they kind of marinate in a lot of this rhetoric, you know. And one of the differences, seems to me, between the right-wing kind of violence and demonstrations and the left-wing, a lot of people are, you know, welcome in the in organizations and Democratic Party gatherings and TV in a way that right-wing extremists are not. Right-wing extremists, we usually see this guy is nuts and we treat him accordingly. He's banished to the fringe. The left-wing people that make these hateful comments are very mainstream.
I want you to hear some of this. And by the way, I don't have to tell you that they said George W. Bush was Hitler, put a mustache on him. They said Mitt Romney was Hitler, right? Those were the good old days. They said that about McCain as well. And listen to this, cut 17.
Let me ask you tonight, do you think Donald Trump is a fascist?
Yes, I do.
Try to prevent the spread of the lawlessness and the fascist chaos that's been unleashed against us.
So when we say Donald Trump is a fascist, fascism, a huge component of fascism is uniting racism, bigotry, a form of racist nationalism.
No one has ever been more dangerous to this country than Donald Trump, and he is a fascist to his core.
So are we just looking back and trying to vilify, or do we think that's been over the top? But I feel like we've been pointing that out along the way.
I think the word fascist is so misused. It originally described an economic program that simplified, wasn't communism, allowed private profit, but is government directed. You know, there was a Cole Porter song, "You're the Tops." So one of the lines originally was, "You're the Tops, you're the great Houdini, you're the Tops, you're Mussolini." People forget the love affair that a lot of them left had with that way back about a century ago. And we just use it to mean dictator today, and it misses it. And the irony is, a lot of people that say they hate fascism are the ones kind of espousing it. That's why Ronald Reagan once said, got in a lot of trouble for it, fascism is the basis of the New Deal, government-directed ownership and so forth. I personally feel he's right.
So the president's going to meet with President Xi on Friday, and they're going to have a talk, I assume, on the phone or FaceTime or whatever they do it, at which time they're going to work out things on TikTok. And I hope for the farmers, soybeans, because we got to be their number one, I guess, seller of soybeans, because our farmers had an unbelievable crop this year. But some reason China stopped buying it. So we'll see how that goes. You also hope they bring up Jimmy Lai. Tell everyone who he is and what happened.
Well, Jimmy Lai, in one word, is a hero. He's a newspaper owner in Hong Kong who printed the truth about the government and the Communist Party, and he got thrown in jail for it. And his health, he's in a very bad way right now. His son has said on TV he's worried about his father dying in prison. He's a British citizen and always has been. He didn't renounce his Chinese, never had it. He was a British citizen, the only passport he ever had. And the British have not been that good about getting him out. I think the prime minister is going to could ask Trump for help, because Trump has said he wants to get Jimmy out. Jimmy's also my godson. Our families are very close, so we have a personal connection to this. And we hope that, obviously, the Brits can't get him out. This is one of their citizens, and it's bad PR for Starmer, because he's letting the Chinese build this fortress embassy where the mint once was, and he's getting nothing for it. You know, at least they could release this guy on compassionate grounds. So I hope it does come up, because Trump clearly wants him out. And the British should want him out, but whether they're doing anything is another question.
Yeah, here's what he said when I asked him. Listen.
So your thoughts, because you're going to be meeting President Xi, and he could do that just by one finger.
I didn't say 100% I'd save him. I said 100% I'm going to be bringing it up, and I've already brought it up. And I'm going to do everything I can to save him. I'm going to do everything. You know, he's a respected guy. He's a good guy. I mean, you could also understand President Xi would not be exactly thrilled by doing it. It was, you know, it was a very nasty period of time in the history of China. I mean, it was a very nasty period of time. With all of that being said, his name has already entered the circle of things that we're talking about, and we'll see what we can do. I really like the son a lot. I love that he's fighting so hard for his father. And his father is, you know, not a young guy. He's, you know, how much longer is he going to live? And I hear he's doing okay health-wise, not great. And we're going to do everything we can.
So he sounds sincere. And when the president, when it comes to family, the that really hits the president hard.
Yeah. Well, one thing I want to say, Brian, when you brought that up, the Lai family was really grateful for people like you bringing up their father and husband and so forth, because that's the only way he's going to get out. And I think Trump was being honest. He clearly likes Jimmy. There are a lot in the administration who also like Jimmy, and he wants to get him out. There are good reasons for China to let him go, because the PR, the bad PR nightmare they've created with Jimmy is huge. If he dies in prison, it'll be humongous. And they don't seem to know how to get out. They finished the trial. They're going to give the verdict pretty soon. We know what the verdict is. And China has to get out of this, and Trump has the key for them. If they're smart, they will take it. In fact, you know, Nixon played a role like that years ago after Tiananmen Square. Everything was stopped between the U.S. and China, because the astrophysicist Feng Zhu, who is a dissident, escaped to the U.S. embassy, and he's holed up there. And we couldn't do anything because China was demanding that we surrender. Nixon wrote Deng Xiaoping a letter saying, look, you got to let him go. It'll be good for you. Yes, he'll get a lot of publicity when it first gets out, but it'll die down. You'll be better off. I think that holds now for Jimmy Lai. And we just got to hope they bring it up. In a way, China has allowed Beijing to create this problem for them. So Trump has something to offer them. There's a lot of things that he could do.
And I know that they have the rare earth, and there's a lot of things that they have us over a barrel on, right. And it's vice versa, too. And their economy is not doing as well as they're perceived. They just seem to have endless money to build up their military, though.
Exactly.
And their infrastructure. And we'll see. Bill, your sense of perspective and history is invaluable, and we hope he's your godson?
Yes, he is. He became a Catholic. His wife was a very strong Catholic, and she's the greatest influence on him. And in 1997, the year Hong Kong was returned to China, Jimmy was baptized by Cardinal Zen and welcomed into the Catholic Church.
Got it. We just got off, but it was great. Bill gave us a good idea, and let's keep our eye on that. He's a great guy, a billionaire who would refuse to leave Hong Kong when he could have. He said, if they're going to arrest me and shut down my paper, I'm going to be here. He did. They did arrest him, and he is in prison right now, and they're for no reason. Elise Stefanik at the bottom of the hour, back in a moment.
Learning something new every day. On the Brian Kilmeade Show. Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I've made it very clear that we have differences. You'll work with whoever the next mayor will be, and I do believe it'll be Zohar Mandel. I do not agree with many of his views, but running a state government or a city government is very different. I disagree with many statements, and I've said that. But also, I believe that we need someone who's going to be open-minded and optimistic.
What is she talking about? There's no reason for her to endorse a self-declared socialist who's really a Marxist, who doesn't like capitalism, will not say globalizing intifada is a bad move, clearly anti-Semitic, who's got a history of anti-cop phrases and beliefs as the worst things possible about ICE. And she says, you know, Keem Jeffries not endorsing. Senator Gillibrand not endorsing. Senator Schumer not endorsing. She is worried about a lieutenant governor in a primary push. So she does a calculated move and says, I don't agree with him, but I'm endorsing him because he's winning the mayoral race. You know what happens? They ask Mamdani, are you endorsing Hochul? She goes, no, I'm not endorsing him. She didn't even secure his endorsement. I mean, who is running that campaign? Every reason to think that Elise Stefanik's got a legitimate chance. Not only is she a talented, relentless politician who's unbelievably knowledgeable about a wide range of topics, who's already proven her mettle in almost single-handedly exposing the bias on and the anti-Semitism on college campuses, but after almost being the UN ambassador, being pulled back for reasons on the House and not having a big enough majority, she's going to try to be the next governor, all but official. We'll talk about the polls, which he has to do to be a Republican and be successful in a state like New York. And what about Kathy Hochul's endorsement? Elise Stefanik, congresswoman from New York, is next.
It's Will Kane Country. Watch it live at noon Eastern, Monday through Thursday at foxnews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss the show. Listen and follow the podcast 5 days a week at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
since having the second baby, the no housing, I've got a rent stabilized apartment, so that's great. And I like how Mondami is on board with freezing the rent, like I think was it de Blasio did a couple years ago? So that was nice. Groceries are going up.
I lived here all my life. And they building on every corner, everywhere, but nowhere. And they talk about affordable living. Affordable living for who?
Especially when I see that people don't have nowhere to live because the rent is so high. And I see that people, they trying to take everything away. And that makes me sad.
Well, the affordability thing is something everybody should work on. Every leader, big and small, small city, big country, whatever it is. But to freeze rents and say that's going to be the issue and not understand how capitalism works when you freeze rents, how do you pay your bills when they climb? That's what Zohreh Mamdani has not been able to answer. He doesn't answer anything. I want fast buses and I want them free. Meanwhile, we're so out of money, we're charging people to drive across the city with the first ever congestion tolls, which we seem to just be absorbing as a city. And sadly, if it does and becomes commonplace, it's coming to your city. Congresswoman Elise Stefanik has had enough. It looks like she's preparing to run for governor on the Republican ticket. She is GOP. She is going to be a candidate, I imagine, and will announce soon. She's currently chairwoman of the House Republican Leadership, House Armed Services Committee. Congresswoman Elise Stefanik, welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Great to be with you again, Brian.
Before I get to the endorsement, which I think has just been a train wreck since she announced it, what do you say to those people that are worried about affordability?
Affordability is a top issue in New York, and it's because of single-party Democrat rule. Democrats have controlled New York State and New York City for decades. We are the highest tax state in the nation, the most burdensome regulation, the most anti-business, anti-family state in terms of our policies. So while Democrats want to shout affordability, it's their policies, their radical far-left tax and spend policies that have made New York City and New York the most unaffordable city and state in the country. And Republicans are going to continue to put forth solutions such as cutting taxes. I was proud to be the deciding vote for the largest tax cut for New Yorkers in the One Big Beautiful Bill that, of course, is working with President Trump to cut taxes. What did all the Democrats want, like Kathy Hochul? They wanted the largest tax increase in our nation's history, which would have been even more burdensome for New Yorkers. So we're going to face this issue head on and deliver actual solutions instead of doubling down on the train wreck.
And Congresswoman, what about freezing rents? Are you going to do that?
We need to cut the cost to do building and make investments. That is what's driving this housing unaffordability issue, is the regulatory environment, the tax environment. New York is the least friendly state in the country to do business, which is why you're seeing so many businesses flee. And the reality is, when Mamdani talks about free this, free that, freeze the rent, free, you know, X, Y, or Z, who's paying for it? It's the working New Yorkers. It's the hardworking Americans who are paying for that with higher and higher taxes. The challenge that's going to happen, Brian, is you have a Democrat socialist controlled city council in New York City. And right now, Eric Adams has been a moderating force on that. Zohreh Mamdani is going to be a rubber stamp. So if they think the policies are bad now, just wait until Mamdani, an anti-Semite communist, is mayor. It will be a rubber stamp radical shift to the left.
Here is Kathy Hochul. 2 days ago, she decides, I'm going to endorse Zohreh Mamdani. And so far, Senator Schumer, Senator Gillibrand, Hakeem Jeffries, not budging. They're not doing it. Why? Because he is basically, he's radioactive politically for the Democrats, because this country is not a socialist Marxist country. But listen to Governor Kathy Hochul explain. Cut 36.
I've made it very clear that we have differences. You know, work with whoever the next mayor will be, and I do believe it'll be Zohreh Mamdani. I do not agree with many of his views, but running a state government or a city government is very different. I disagree with many statements, and I've said that. But also, I believe that we need someone who's going to be open-minded and optimistic.
Really? Thanks. Thanks for that endorsement. Open-minded and optimistic. I'll vote for you. Is this all about her trying to neutralize her opponent in the primary?
Absolutely. This is how weak she is, Brian. She is the leader of the New York Democrat Party, and she's letting Zora Mamdani instead lead her. And what is just really unbelievable is after she endorsed him, less than 24 hours later, he refused to endorse her. He refused to support her for governor. So she's beholden to the far left. This is not just a, I'm going to work with the mayor. She endorsed him. She's the highest ranking official to do so. And that means she owns the defund the police policies. That means she owns Zora Mamdani's proposal to abolish private property. That means she owns abolishing not only private property, but abolishing private health care insurance. That means she owns these tax hikes. She owns the anti-Semitism since Zora Mamdani. So she can't continue to run from this. But what it really is, Brian, is her polling is very bad among Democrat voters. We see it. Obviously, this has been publicly reported. She is desperately trying to shore up her left, and she's beholden to them. I always said it was only a matter of time before she would bend the knee, and she certainly did.
Here it is. Here's how it sounded. Cut 37.
Are you supporting Hochul for re-election? And if so, are you worried that her supporting you is actually going to hurt her among swing voters next year?
You know, I tease you about being an immigrant father, about asking me about the thing beyond the thing. My focus is on November. And I'm excited to have the governor's support in that fight for November as we make it clear that we can put the days of City Hall and Albany being at war in the past.
That's not an endorsement. And Hank Shinecoff, you know, a longtime political operative on the Democratic side, it said Mamdani looks like he is the head of the Democratic Party. This shows the power shift. Mamdani and his movement are in charge. And he, other people have said the same thing. But looking from your perspective, I know what you stand for. But you sound like somebody that might not be what the majority of New Yorkers stand for. You sound like what Long Island stands for, what Staten Island stands for, what upstate New York stands for, but not what New York City stands for, which has stopped Republicans from winning. How do you solve that?
Well, Brian, people want common sense. If you look at my record in Congress, I not only have I'm in the top most bipartisan members of Congress among all of leadership. I have one of the most independent record on the issues that matter when it is growing the economy, cutting taxes. The majority of New Yorkers agree with that. When it comes to supporting our law enforcement, the majority of New Yorkers agree with that. So I have a record of reaching well beyond party lines. We have a record not only of flipping my district, and yes, it's upstate, but people forget this was an Obama district. It was held by a Democrat beforehand. Always a 50-50 situation. Yep. We win not only Republicans, we win independents overwhelmingly, and I peel off more than 25% of Democrats. And most importantly, we have enthusiasm to turn out the vote. My district, I have the highest voter turnout of any congressional district in New York State. That doesn't happen by accident. It means people are excited and energized to go to the polls. And we're going to put forth real solutions and a proven record. Let's look back at, let's roll the tape on Kathy Hochul. Kathy Hochul started her career in Erie County as a town official where she bragged about the Conservative Party endorsement. She bragged about the NRA endorsement to get the vote from upstate. And then she ran for Congress, only served one term because she was thrown out by the voters, and was really the accidental governor because Andrew Cuomo chose her as an LG because of regional issues. She was known to be totally outside of the decision-making process from Andrew Cuomo's perspective, and he wanted to replace her as lieutenant governor. She's accidental because he, of course, stepped down amidst all the controversies that he conducted. But Kathy Hochul will do or say whatever she has to. This is someone who, again, talked about how she was conservative for upstate, and now she's bending the knee to the Marxist communists. She's left New Yorkers so far behind and is putting her political future ahead of hardworking New Yorkers, who she's putting last.
Well, why is it that Gillibrand, Schumer, and Akeem Jeffries are on the sideline then?
Because they know it's so politically toxic. And Hakeem Jeffries, for those House seats, I mean, his focus is on the House majority. And as you know, it runs right through the state of New York, those key seats on Long Island, the Hudson Valley. And you saw Swazi, you saw Laura Gillen refuse to endorse Mamdani. So Hakeem, you know, I think Hakeem ultimately will bend the knee as well as Hochul, but they're in a tough spot because it is he is wildly unpopular among not just Republicans, but Democrats as well.
So Sienna, by the way, what did you learn from Lee Zeldin getting within, I think, 6 points of Hochul last time?
So number one, Lee Zeldin ran a great race. He and I came into Congress together, and we actually had sort of similar districts, different parts of the state, but we both flipped districts from Democrat to Republican. What Lee Zeldin proved was that this assumption that New York is a blue state no state has moved more to the Republican direction than New York. And that started when the congressional seats were won, then Lee Zeldin ran. And then in the presidential, no state moved more Republican with Trump at the top of the ticket than New York. I think Zeldin also tapped into an excitement that it is possible. The fact that he came within 6 points when previously these are, you know, big double-digit losses shows that there is a path in the right year in the with the right candidate. Zeldin did phenomenal. I mean, I thought he was going to win. So did a lot of people. The energy enthusiasm was unlike anything we had seen. And we want to build on that. And we're going to have to build on that as Republicans. But it's always tough in New York. The other challenge is we're losing population because of the failed policy. So many people continue to leave. And I think Mamdani is going to expedite that, unfortunately, for the state of New York. But those are our voters. So Zeldin proved a lot. And we need to build on that success.
So Sienna did a poll, released it Tuesday, and it shows that you're trailing 52 to 27. Your thoughts? They sampled 802 people.
Yeah, and, we've had a long history with Sienna polling. Sienna polling was totally off, not only on the presidential, but they were totally off on Lee Zeldin's gubernatorial race. What was really laughable about the poll is it says only 60% of Republicans are going to support Elise. That's not reality. I've never gotten less than 90% of Republicans ever in the entire history. We are more energy and enthusiastic among Republican voters. It also says that 60% of conservatives are voting for Kathy Hochul. That is fantasy land. It says that she's, you know, hanging tough in Long Island. The same day that poll came out, there was another poll that showed that 60% of Nassau County voters do not support Kathy Hochul. So, you know, we dove into the data points. Again, typical Sienna polling. What I care about is real polling. And I'll tell you, Hochul's endorsement of Mamdani shows that she has major, major political problems and major polling issues.
Well, I'll tell you what, I don't know who told her to do that endorsement, but do you think you might be going against somebody else? His lieutenant, the Delgado, I think the lieutenant governor?
Well, Delgado also served in the House, and he is running to Kathy Hochul's left.
Yeah.
And what's important for voters to know is that this is not just any lieutenant governor. This is her hand-picked lieutenant governor. He left the congressional seat to be the LG. And to have someone who works that up close and turns on her because she's such an incompetent governor, that tells me a lot. She is going to have a primary with Delgado. And again, Mamdani withholding that support and the Working Families Party, which dictates where the New York Democrat Party is and runs them to the left. This is going to be very interesting to watch this play out. The other important point about that Sienna poll, it was not a coincidence, Brian, that they put it out the same day as her Mamdani endorsement, where they tried to slip that in Sunday night to try to blunt the negative impact among voters.
Yeah, I think it's just interesting that she says, I love Mamdani because he's willing to take on Trump. When has that been a criteria, saying I don't want to work with the president?
Well, the dirty little secret is, and Kathy Hochul won't tell this to her Democrat and far left base, I know, I'm, you know, when Congress is in session, I'm in D.C. She runs down to the White House quietly all the time, begs Trump, begs him. She is a weak, weak leader. And, you know, she says one thing, she does another. She wants to hide that from voters. And it's because, you know, the talking point among far left voters is opposition to Trump. Trump is moving our country in the right direction, yet New York continues barreling down this path in the wrong one with single-party Democrat rule.
I tell you what, I was in your district. I had not known, it was the first time ever, even though I'm from New York, Fort Ticonderoga is a feature we have on What Made America Great, my series, so I was up there. It's amazing how beautiful that part of New York is. It would be
it
tough for you to go to Albany.
Fort Ticonderoga is amazing. My district has just a tremendous history. If you look at the battles of the Revolutionary War, it's also home to the battles of Saratoga. And of course, as we're celebrating the 250th anniversary of our country, I hosted a big event with America 250 at Fort Ticonderoga earlier this year. So we really appreciate you highlighting such a gem we have. It's one of my favorite places. I grew up going there, and I've loved representing it in Congress.
I only got a minute left, but on your house, can I tap into your house seat for a second, you're on armed services. Are we in the process of selling Patriot missiles to NATO so they can give them to Ukraine? Because I heard that was being held up.
Well, certainly I have strongly supported President Trump's approach. During his first term, he provided defensive lethal aid, and we are going to continue to work with this administration to make sure that we're protecting, number one, U.S. national security, and that we have a strong partnership with our NATO allies, who President Trump has rightly said they need to increase their investment and not rely on the United States solely. So, you know, that is the update there. I'm not going to get ahead of the president, of course, in his decision making.
All right. When are you going to make your decision and announcement?
After the November elections, Brian, okay. We launched Save Our State PAC, and I'm a big believer. We've done this in my district. You have to lay the groundwork. This is a 62-county state. You have to make sure that Republicans are continue to do well. We've made those investments in each of the 62 counties. We have key races, and after this November, I look forward to making my announcement, and we're getting an outpouring of support all across the state.
Well, Congresswoman, you're an impactful force in Washington. We always love having you on. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Brian.
You got Elise Stefanik from the 21st District in New York, who's going to run for the Republican ticket first, try to get the nomination, and it looks like she's going to run against what we think will be Governor Kathy Hochul, who is the utter definition of vulnerable. Back in a moment.
You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I'm Guy Benson, in for Dana Perino. This week on Perino on Politics, I'm joined by Fox News contributor, OutKick columnist, and host of the Getting Hammered podcast, Mary Catherine Hamm, my dear friend.
Listen and follow now at foxnewspodcast.com. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
President Trump made it clear that he would have been willing to let TikTok go dark, that we were not going to give up national security in favor of the deal. So we were able to reach a series of agreements, mostly for things we will not be doing in the future that have no effect on our national security.
So that is our Treasury Secretary, Scott Bessent, talking about what seems to be inevitable, the selling of TikTok to an American businessman, Jeff Yass, and he's among the people. It's not Kevin O'Leary who thought it, but I just want to make sure there's no hook to China. It's not that I don't respect the algorithm. It's not that I don't think it's a great site. Obviously, it's winning in the free market, but it's also allowing China to be our number one news source for our next generation of people. That's why Congress voted to ban it. And I know people make a living on it and people like it and they say it's better than Instagram and Facebook. Okay, go ahead. It's not something I'm looking to get involved in. But I appreciate the success, what they came up with, how it's not been able to be replicated by Zuckerberg or Elon Musk on X. Fine. But it's China. So we're supposed to ban it. So the president said, why don't we just work out to sell it? And it looks like it's been worked out. I just want to make sure everything is out. They take it out by its roots, and they can't have be still archiving our numbers, our beliefs, our trends, our thoughts, and be in control of the news feed. For example, I like people to tell me how many pro-Taiwan stories are on there, how many anti-Russian stories are on there, and don't tell me you're getting an honest feed, and they're just giving you honest algorithms. Okay, I'm not on there, but it's going to be sold, I hope. And we'll talk about that because the president's got a White House TikTok account. Do you know it's being barraged by negativity? Overwhelmingly negative. People are going on there posting horrible things. That's not a big selling point for the White House.
It's the Will Cain Show. Watch it live at noon Eastern, Monday through Thursday on FoxNews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss a show. Get the podcast 5 days a week at FoxNewsPodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.